Good evening. Good afternoon, everyone. All right, so yay, we're setting a pattern. We say things, you guys respond and laugh. Let's try this again. Good evening, everyone. All right, so you're quicker learners than the American crowd were. They were not really really up on the whole humor and interactivity thing. So do want to start off by saying hi. My name is Matthew Roach. I'm a senior program manager on the SQL Server team. We actually have perhaps not a cast of thousands tonight, but we have a very special session tonight. Are you going to join us? Technology is often my friend. Audio technology, not so much. The crew here is excellent as well. So we have Adam Wilson, who's joining as well. Adam works on the SQL Azure Data Market team. We have Jen Stirrup, who is a SQL Server MVP from Scotland. And we have Peter Myers, who is a SQL Server MVP. He says that he's from San Francisco. I don't know if I trust it, given his accent. You guys can judge once we start going. Do want to point out that this is the first time that the BI Power Hour has ever been done at TechEd Europe. It's sort of been a staple of TechEd North America for the last 7 or 8 years. We wanted to bring it over here this year. Pretty much everything conspired against us to make it happen, but thanks to the hard work of the folks that are up here with me, we're able to pull it all together. And since this is the first time that we've done it here in Europe, we want to lay some ground rules. We want to let you know what we're doing, what you should expect, and sort of what's in store. First of all, we have demos. It's a very demo-heavy session. There's some PowerPoint slides, but for the most part, it's all about the demo. And we also have more demos. What you will not find is anything that is useful to you in your job, your day-to-day life, unless your life is kind of messed up, or we'll leave that at that. But if you do happen to accidentally learn something, we can't be held responsible for this, but we have done everything possible to ensure that you do not leave this room with any useful, meaningful, work-applicable skills. Now, I'm mentioning this because when this session is done, you are going to flock to a web browser, and you're going to fill out an evaluation for the session at europe.mstached.com. And in previous sessions, despite this disclaimer, despite the context setting, people will say, good session, but I wanted to learn something that is applicable for my job. If this is you, I would like to notice or like to point out to you that we do have two exits. This is the appropriate tool for you to use right now, and we're going to have some fun. So let's jump in, talk a little bit about Amsterdam. Even though this is the first time that the BI Power Hour has been here in Europe, it is my first trip to Amsterdam. I've never been here before. I know that TechEd has been here before, but it's never been on my schedule. But I have many friends, either from Europe, who have visited here many times, and they have been telling me different things to see and different things to do. Now, for a little bit more context, I moved out to the Seattle area last summer when I joined the SQL Server team and have recently bought a house. So I've got a brand new house, and I'm thinking, my first time in Amsterdam, I should take something home with me. So what are the defining characteristics of Amsterdam and Dutch culture? So, you know, what should I get here to take home? And I was thinking, you know, wooden shoes, a toy windmill, something, and people say, no, no, no. Apparently, Amsterdam is really known for its coffee. And this was very strange to me, but everyone that I talked to says, oh, this is your first time in Amsterdam. Go to a coffee shop while you're there. And even though this sounds great, I love coffee. You know, I live in Seattle. There are Starbucks everywhere. I don't think that I'm going to go out for a coffee shop unless for some compelling reason, you know, if Dutch coffee is really all this good. But we probably won't do it. It's a short week, right? But I have a new house. I'm furnishing this house, and I'm trying to have nice color-coordinated themes in my room. So I've been doing some online shopping, and I have, you know, need a lamp, need a light for my room. I've narrowed it down to these two, and was thinking about ordering one of these online before I came. But again, friends are telling me, apparently there is a district here in Amsterdam that is specifically for red lights. So they're telling me that I should go out and do some window shopping or something along those lines to get one of these lights before I fly back home. Go to this district, and again, we'll have to see. If you guys have any recommendations on a place where I can pick up one of these, please come up and talk to me after the session. You know, I'm American. It's, you know, lost in the foreign countries, so we'll have to see where that goes. But enough about me, enough about the context. Let's talk. It wants to stay there. So with no further ado, or OLEDB or ODBC for that matter, let's talk about SQL Server and the very special announcement that we have to make here. All right, so there's no noise. At this point, the American audience broke out in laughter. So this is perhaps the most significant thing that's being announced at TechEd 2012 Europe. We have a special end-of-the-world Mayan edition of SQL Server 2012 with features not found in any other edition. You guys know that the world is ending in December, right? You've seen the news. So we've added, first and foremost, Mayan support to T-SQL, to MDX, all of the languages, so it's comprehensive throughout the tools. I've had a couple people, we've got, you know what a TAP program is, right? The early adopters that come in to test the software and give us feedback to make sure we're on the right track. Some of them asked, why did you invest in the new date time 2 data type? You know, we're never going to need a year past 2012. Why do we have all this extra extra support and range? Anyone have any ideas? It's the granularity. We have much more precision, so if you want to know how much time you have left, we've got better tools to track it. Now, different people have different theories about why the world is going to end. And some people believe one thing, other people believe others, so it really depends on what evidence you look at, where you get your news, and so on. Some people will actually argue that the world is not going to end, that the Mayans were wrong, that there's other evidence, and so on. But I honestly think this is just industry propaganda. You guys remember the other database, the red database that used to say unbreakable, unbreakable, unbreakable? They are just jealous because while they're paying for product placement in superhero movies, we actually had a blockbuster Hollywood motion picture filmed and delivered about 2012, years before the product actually shipped. So how can they compete with this? We've got everything covered. So has anyone been to a BI Power Hour in the US before? So a couple hands. Are any of you wearing your BI Power Hour t-shirts tonight? Okay, so one of the things that typically characterizes a BI Power Hour in the US is the folks that are on the stage hurling projectiles into the crowd, usually logo t-shirts, beach balls, things along those lines. Well, we did something a little bit different. So we've got good news and bad news for the swag department. So the good news is I actually got LCA approval to get these Mayan-themed monoliths. They're about 8 inches tall, 4 inches wide. They're made of rock. You remember the disclaimers that you signed when you were coming in? You guys all signed your disclaimers, right? The waivers, the insurance waiver. They did not have the waivers. Okay, it's all right, because the plane with the monoliths on them was lost in the Bermuda Triangle. We don't actually have that swag to throw. I'm not sure which is the good news or the bad news, but in any event, you may live to see the end of the year. So with that said, this is the session. Each one of us working with different SQL Server technologies, some using the Mayan edition of SQL Server, some using other editions, we have put together demos and examples to show how we are using the power of SQL Server 2012 to prepare for the end days ahead of us. And I am going to switch over and show you what I am doing with SQL Server Integration Services. Now, you guys are looking at me. You're probably thinking, that's a handsome man. He must have girls around him all the time. He's, you know, international speaker, rock star. He's up on stage. You know, he must get out all the time, lots of dates, right? Especially since I'm a heavy metal fan, go to the crowds, got the long hair, and I bake. So I learned, my father when I was growing up said, have long hair, the girls love it. It hasn't worked for me. My mother said, the way to a girl's heart is through her stomach. Well, I'm a pretty good baker, but it hasn't really paid off the way that I was hoping it would. So I've got you know, all sorts of things going on, but in the end, so I spend a lot of time with my cat, Mr. Wiggles. So Mr. Wiggles is a great cat. He's very funny, so I post pictures of him. I post stories about him, and we get out a lot together. He's a little bit jealous these days. We're kind of spending some time apart because after some of my previous sessions and previous explorations into integration services, I am a lot busier than I used to be. So when I started speaking at TechEd and doing more and more of these big presentations, even though I had zero friends on Facebook for a long time, those friend requests just started flooding in and flooding in. And eventually, Facebook actually called me up. I got a phone call from Mike Zuckerberg saying, Matthew, you have too many friends. You're slowing down our system. They capped my account at 10,000 friends. It was just too much for Facebook to handle. So what I had to do was to develop a system so that whenever a new friend request came in, I would decide, is this a friend that's worth having? And if so, what friend do I get rid of to make room for the new one? And fortunately, Integration Services has a great API. I developed a couple of custom components so that whenever a new friend request comes in, I've got this script task with a very custom and very intelligent artificial intelligence that will either accept the request or reject it and send it to my MySpace destination. So that's for the ones who don't make the cut. Otherwise, it can bring it in. We build it up. So 10,000 is right where I try to stay. Now, when this started getting out of hand, even with the power of Integration Services, there's just so much more going on that I needed to branch out, use more technologies. So last year I built a social life manager with Integration Services, master data services to keep track of who's a friend and who's a frenemy, you know, the ones that pretend to be friends but are just not the right people, and data quality services to do matching and deduplication and cleanup and so on. And because the volume of data that's coming in was so high, actually had to use Stream Insight to do the in-memory querying and the complex event processing. But at this point, the life of the international technical rock star is becoming too much for me. You know, I've gone from staying at home every night with Mr. Wiggles to going out and partying every night with Mr. Wiggles. But it starts to wear on you. And I've started to think this year, we've got 6 months left, I really need to find someone to settle down, maybe, you know, fall in love before the end of the year. So I decided that I would go out and try online dating. So this was my first attempt at online dating. This was my first profile, and it was a very popular profile. I got lots and lots of requests, but to be honest with you, some of the requests were quite shocking. So I had to do more research. And you know, being a data guy, being the BI guy, I actually started to look at some of the data that's available. A lot of these dating sites today, they will put together strategies and statistics about the number of responses that you get or the different characteristics that will go into making you rated more or less attractive. This is all real data up here coming off various online dating sites. So apparently, there is a direct correlation between the attractiveness of a profile as rated by the people viewing it, and the type of camera that you use. So if you use a webcam, you're on the low end. If you have an SLR, replaceable lens camera, you're up at the high end. But of course, it's hard to tell. Do just more attractive people have better cameras, or is it the lens on the camera? So we don't want to draw too many conclusions here. We've also found that the make of the camera has an even stronger correlation, and I believe firmly that this is causality. So having a Windows phone truly makes you more attractive than owning some of the other more fruity or robot-like phones. And not that there's anything wrong with fruits or robots, for that matter. There's also a lot of information available based on the type of profile picture that you have and the number of messages that you get every month. And interestingly enough, if you post without a shirt, you get many more messages. And they say that the men are shallow, but we're not going to go there. If you have a portrait or an action shot, it's very low. But we'll use this. We'll move on. And this is something that concerned me a lot. So there's a nice correlation between how attractive you are, as rated by the others, and the number of messages that you get. You see it going up and up and up, but then there's a sharp drop-off. So if you're super attractive, if you're beautiful, if you're a supermodel, you're intimidating, right? You're not going to go because you're afraid of getting shot down. Why even try? And I was very concerned that I would fall into that extreme category. So as I was putting my new profile together, why are they laughing? Adam is making a face again, isn't he? So please pay attention to the presentation. I let these guys stay up here while I was talking because it will make for an easier transition, but please don't look at them. So, all right, so I'm going to move on. So I also found, this is my own research. This is not something that is coming from the dating sites, but there's also a pretty strong correlation between the number of times that you mention your cat in your profile and the number of messages that you get. And it drops off pretty steeply after zero. There's a strange outlier at 4 I haven't been able to explain, but you know, after I get back from get back to Seattle from Amsterdam, we'll do some data mining on that and find some key influencers and so on. So I've put together, and my senator actually sent me this picture. So I assume that, it's a U.S. politics joke. They're not going to get that one. You can Bing that after the session is done. But my senator sent me this picture on his cell phone. So I decided that I would use this since it was given to me. But we have a new profile. And so far, it's been doing pretty well. It's been doing well enough that I have actually put together some custom integration services components to manage my dating life. And let's do this. So if you've worked with integration services in 2012, you notice we've got the new toolbox. We can customize things. Makes working with these custom components much easier. So I have put together an online dating source. This will pull down the data from the online site. And let me mention as well, I'm a cat lover. I wanted to find someone who is also a cat lover. If you're interested in online dating and you're looking for cat lovers, be very careful of the search terms that you use. So there was interesting things out there, but just be careful. Don't do it from work. So we've got our online dating source. I've got another custom, the perfect match transformation. So this is a customizable and configurable data flow transformation that will look at all of the criteria that are important to me. And will, you know, for example, it's a techie, interested in a techie girl who shares my passion in data. It might identify this is the wrong type of geek, not the girl that I want to be spending too much time with. Sometimes my business manager.
What? You don't have a business manager, Matthew, do you?
So my mom. So there's some girls that my business manager would not approve of, so we'll filter them out. There's some that are just plain wrong. I learned that from my previous forays, and some that you know that you're not going to want to spend too much time with. But for the ones that are good matches, I have a display transformation that I can see the picture, and I'm hoping that as you guys are here, you can help me choose the right girl, the right partner for me to spend the rest of the world with. So let us run this guy. So let's choose this. So we're going to connect up. And of course, anytime that you're doing a live demo where you're connecting to the internet, especially when you're on stage, it's hit or miss. It's a real risky thing. And all right, so we've got a lot. We've got 134 matches, so 134 prospective life partners who have expressed interest on the profile, but none of them are a perfect match. So remember I said it was customizable? Let's come in here and choose edit. So here are different criteria. So the height differential, you know, I like short girls, but it's not that important. And the age isn't that important. We'll take that down. You know, they say that if the man or the woman earns much more than the other, it causes trouble. But realistically, we're not going to be around that much longer. So that's not that important. So we'll choose OK. We'll run this guy again. Keep your fingers crossed for me, guys, because this is important. All right, so there's another variable. We see the advanced tab for our configuration. There's another variable that I find is equally important for online dating. So let's change this guy, and we'll run it one more time. Fingers crossed. Excellent. So you guys with me, right? So Sunny, 32, recently separated, traveling the world, perfect. What do you guys think? Yes? No? Okay, so we've got a yes. Next. I just love cats so much. I love cats. So this is going to be good. So yes? No? People? Oh, excellent, excellent. So it's a good crowd. Medium build. Short hair, technology, fine dining, cats, kangaroos, and wallabies. That's kind of awkward. All right, redhead girl, average height and body type, engineering, studying to be a software engineer. Yes? No? Yes, thank you, thank you. Yes. beep? Beep. A robot? It's wrong. It's morally wrong to date a robot, isn't it? So, I clicked on that by accident. We'll fix that up after the demo. That's not important. So, E to the T to the L. I'm an ETL developer. I really love moving data, but only when it's fast. This sounds promising. This could be the perfect girl. Never mind. So, no. All right. So, self-cleaning, sleeping, back rubs, cat lovers only. Mr. Wiggles! So he talked about seeing other people, but I didn't think that he was... I don't know if I am ready for online dating, so I think this is going to be enough for me. I hope that you've seen how you can use integration services for lots of different aspects of your life, and maybe Mr. Wiggles and I will just be happy for the rest of the year. So we will switch this over. We will switch this over to Adam, and we will come here. And here, and Adam, what are you going to show us today?
You know, Matthew, I'm going to look at how I can deal with my meager number of friends. I was, you know, a bit embarrassed. You have both 10,000 friends, but you didn't tell them something. You showed your friend request processor. You didn't tell them about the friend request generator that you used to get to 10,000 in the first place.
I've showed that in other sessions, though, so I feel very mildly a little comfortable about that. But thank you for bringing it up in front of
I thought it was important for full transparency because you had the whole set of solutions you had.
the slide must have been hidden. I thought it was in my deck. I did.
Okay. Yeah. Likely excuse. I'll check later. But, I have a meager number of friends, but there's still a problem. With the end of the world coming pretty soon, you know, I need to figure out, well, which of my friends should I go and visit for one last time? And, you know, I've had so many good memories, I just want to be able to go and relive it with them, with the non-10,000 that I have. But, you know, I have a bit of a problem. I grew up on the East Coast of Canada. I went to school on the East Coast as well. I lived a couple different places on the West Coast. So my friends are all over the place. And, I may not have enough time to visit them all if the doomsday is coming within a couple of days, some short notice. Maybe there's some locusts around. So I need to plan an end-of-the-world road trip. Or actually, you know what? I want to visit more of them. I'll make it an end-of-the-world flight plan. How do I go and visit as many of my friends in the last few days I have available?
Mr. Wiggles doesn't like flying, though.
Okay. Well, that's okay. You know, Mr. Wiggles, maybe I will take a train to visit him or her. But the interesting thing is that, you know, how am I going to prioritize which of my friends I visit first? You know what? We'll find out how I'm going to prioritize you. But, you know, some of them I've seen for a long time, you know, others I was really close with when I was a child, but, you know, I'm a bit selfish. So I want to make sure my last days are good as well. You know, so I want to use data to figure out how can I make my last few days enjoyable while maybe also seeing some of my friends. I want to go somewhere hot and sunny. I actually don't want to be stuck in airports, you know, waiting in security lines because I hear they get really bad when, you know, everyone's running around trying to save themselves.
Yeah, we call that Heathrow.
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to show a demo of how I pulled together my list of friends and used some interesting data from the Azure Data Market to figure out how I prioritize which cities to go and visit. So I'll switch to the demo here. So here I have my list of friends. And you know what? Matthew, you're on here. So we're going to see where you show up. I went out to the Azure Data Market. It's a place to go and find reference data from a whole bunch of different providers. And it turns out we have some data that's relevant for the end of the world. Well, for other things too, but mostly for the end of the world. So what I did is I used Power Pivot to import not just my list of friends, but also to bring in two other interesting data sets. I brought in international weather data, so high and low temperatures from all the cities where my friends are. And I brought in air carrier performance. So we actually have daily information on what the average arrival and departure delays are at all of these airports. So I can know whether it's safe to go and visit someone or whether I'll be stuck on the tarmac. So I went ahead and I built that into a model here. So I related all of my friends to, you know, those different data sets that I brought in.
You're related to all of your friends?
Related, you know, maybe with your size of friends, but you know, only a few of these that I know of. So I'm going to go and build some calculations on which of these cities I should go and visit. So yeah, as you'd expect, maybe I want to maximize the number of friends that I go and see. So you know, I want to look at the count of friends that I have in these different cities. And maybe I also want to go and look at what the average delay is on arrivals, you know, for these different cities here. And maybe also I'll go and take a look at the average high temperature. Now, unfortunately, there's no clear winner. And I certainly don't want to go to Boston. San Francisco looks good for temperature in general, although 64 still sounds cold. But the flight delay is 15 minutes compared to 8 on average. And I really can't stand staying in airports. That's not going to be any good. Since I know it's ending in December, let me just actually filter this so that I'm only looking at the weather and arrival delay in December. Let's see if that does anything better here. So we'll use the month name as a report filter. And by the way, I actually got this date dimension from the data market as well. We have a built-in date dimension you can download and use. But I'm interested just in December. Okay, so actually the temperatures look even worse. So now I'm not sure I want to go anywhere, but at least the delays got a little bit lower for some of them. You know, to break this tie, I think I need to use some super complicated algorithm. So, you know, I took some random numbers. Mm-hmm. I multiplied them together, you know, based on these three different factors. And I came up with a score for each of these different cities. Okay, I have my city rating here. So let me just add that. Okay, so actually it looks like Seattle's the highest.
We're going to be hanging out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think so? You think so, actually?
Yeah, Seattle's the highest.
But you know, there's one extra factor I need to include here.
Mr. Wiggles?
Mr. Wiggles. No, Mr. Wiggles. Does not factor in here. It's not high on my list of priorities to pet your cat.
I'm actually busy that day.
You are?
Yeah.
All days between now and the end of the...
We have a vet appointment.
You have a vet appointment?
Yes.
Every day. Okay. We'll see. But, you know, you may be disqualified for another reason. I hope not. But, you know, we actually have one data set in the data market which is purpose-built for this demo. Weather and, you know, air delays you could use for anything. We have something in the data market called the National Death Index. And I'm not making this up. So whenever anyone dies in the U.S., they get added to this registry of people that have died so that, you know, you can look them up and, you know, see whether the person you're dealing with is no longer around.
Is it predictive?
I don't know. I added some special logic, I'll tell you. So it's a bit predictive.
Peter said he was doing some data mining and predictive analysis, so maybe you guys, anyway, get together after the session. I don't want to distract you.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. So I added this. So I added a second column here. Let me just unhide it. It's called the health status. So I wrote a little UDF in Excel that's going to go and query that data set using my friend's first and last name and when they were born and tell me whether they're alive or not. And, you know, between now and the end of the year, unfortunately, maybe the plague or the locusts will end up one place sooner than the other. So I'll go and check, and I hope they're all still alive as it goes and runs that query.
Oh.
They are. Oh, but Matthew, wow, it says you're comatose here. You know, it's real-time data, so maybe this is from last night, because I remember really late last night, you were pretty comatose, and I know you had a good time,
The catnip was excellent. The tea shops are also very good.
Yeah, tea shops, I'm sure they lace those. So, you know, maybe some of my friends will be comatose, and I can actually include that in my model as well here. So I'm actually going to filter out any of my friends that don't have a health status of alive. That's probably a safe thing to do. And actually, that actually puts it over the top. I no longer need to visit Seattle first. I can go and visit San Francisco. So, you know, sorry, if I only get to visit one city, it's not going to be you. You're going to have to keep Mr. Wiggles company all to yourself, maybe use some of that catnip. But at least I'll see my friends and maximize my last few days on this earth.
I'm never going to present with you again. And I know why Peter is moving away from San Francisco now.
Cool. Well, that was just a couple examples of how data from the data market can make it really easy to plan things both close to your life and maybe some of your own business problems, too.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Adam, I guess. So Jen, I know that you've been sort of taking a different tack on things, maybe finding a way to prevent the end of the world. It seems very proactive to me. So do you want to tell us about that?
Yes. So what I've decided to do instead is try to find ways that we can actually prevent the end of the world according to the Mayan calendar. So what I've decided to do is try and do some analysis on the type of people who might actually be able to save us. Okay? So in order to do that, first of all...
Oh, Jen?
Oops.
So, Jen, I think this is the first tech ed that she's spoken at, and the speaker training that we get, we learn that there are the four things that you never mention inside of a public audience. You don't want to offend anyone, right? So you know what the first three are. The fourth one is actually Clippy. So this is something that the Office team learned back in the 2003 time frame, is that as helpful and honestly cute and friendly as Clippy is, many users find his presence less than comforting. So as long as you don't talk about religion for the rest of the presentation, I think that we're going to be okay. But please go on.
Well, that brings me neatly on to my next thing. Before I proceed, is there anybody here who loves Clippy and Mrs. Clippy? No? I'm the only one? All right. Oh, there's a few Clippy fans over there. Yay! I have one. Thank you very much. So, what I thought I'd do is, the sort of people that might try and save us might be Jedi Knights. Yeah? Are there any Jedi Knights in the audience? No? I'm just asking. Serious question. Oh, I've got one over there. Hello. Thank you very much. And to make sure there's balance in the universe as well, are there any Sith?
I see someone in the front wearing black.
Ah, okay.
So should we ask the Jedis to go to one side and the Sith to go to the other? And all of the BI guys can just stay in the middle to keep their options open?
That sounds good to me. So what I did was I went and collected some census data in the UK and tried to work out how many people in the UK reported themselves as Jedis. So in the year 2001, the Jedi religion was reported the fourth largest religion in the UK. And funnily enough, it was the second largest reported religion in New Zealand. Is anybody here from New Zealand? No, no Jedis from New Zealand? Okay. So, what we try to work out is, I assume everybody knows what a Jedi Knight is. They use the Force in order to promote good and defeat evil. But unfortunately, we are midichlorian challenged. We don't always recognise them. And this actually happened in the UK recently. If anybody is familiar with the Tesco Superstore, a gentleman was asked to leave on the grounds he was wearing a Jedi Knight costume and refused to take off his hood. So what he did was he then claimed religious discrimination on the grounds that he was a Jedi Knight and should be allowed to move freely around Tesco store. Tesco actually decided to strike back. Good, you got that one. I wasn't sure if you would. Tesco was struck back by saying that Obi-Wan Kenobi and Luke Skywalker had often appeared in public without wearing their hoods and had never turned to the dark side. So that's a lesson for us all in there, I'm sure. They also explained that Jedi Knights might not actually see the special offers in the Tesco stores if they are wearing their hoods, so they have their shoppers' best interests at heart.
So the last time that I was at Tesco, they actually made me put my Jedi robe back on. It was all that I had clean that day, but it was very warm, so I took it off for a while. And, apparently, religious discrimination doesn't come in that context, although the police do. The police in England, very, very nice.
Well, funnily enough, when you mentioned the police, it was found under the Freedom of Information Act that there were 8 police officers in Scotland who defined their religion as Jedi Knight. And they were based in Glasgow. And let's face it, if you've been to Glasgow, there's nowhere else on earth that needs Jedi Knights more, probably. They're in the right place. Okay, so what I did was try to find the Jedi Knights among us. Okay, we have one here today, so hopefully we'll see if we have any more. All right. So I thought what I would do first of all is show you some visualizations of the data and make sure you see that all right. Let's go full screen.
And what is this tool that you're using? That's with the pretty charts and stuff?
The pretty charts and stuff. This is called PowerView. Has anybody seen PowerView yet? You might have seen it in the keynote. Okay, about a third of the audience, that's good. It's built-in reporting services, but don't let that put you off, okay? It's actually very easy to use software.
So, and And what is that small moon?
The small moon, the little pink one.
They got it. Someone say it. What is that small moon? That's not a moon. It's a space station. That's, all right. Well, I'm getting pulled toward it. I'll be quiet.
So what I did was I tried to work out if there was a relationship between the murder rate in our country and the number of Jedis. So on the y-axis, I've got the murder rate in countries, and on the x-axis, I've got the percentage of Jedi. So we have an interesting thing happening here in New Zealand, and what I've done here is filter the data to make it more evident, is that they have the highest percentage of Jedis, as we saw in the earlier slide, and that's actually interesting because they've actually got the highest murder rate in amongst those countries as well. So it's difficult when you look at data sometimes in isolation. The murder rate could be simply that there's also a high proportion of Sith in New Zealand, and the Jedis have decided to kill them. Alternatively, that's maybe just why there are so many Jedi people in the environment.
Or it could be that the Sith, because there's no Sith option on the census, they're simply reporting themselves as Jedi because that's the closest thing, and then they're doing all the murders. So for those, raise your hand again, Mr. Jedi over there. For the anyone sitting near him, you may want to move before the end of the session, or you may not be able to experience the full capabilities of SQL Server Mayan Edition. So just, you signed the waiver, you don't need to, but keep it in mind.
So it's quite interesting looking at the data, because we started to look at ways that we could filter the data as well. So I'll just come out of that and show you this one. This is just it's quite a busy visualization. And what I did was I took the UK census data and tried to split it out into different districts. And then I could start to filter it to say, well, in Cambridgeshire, for example, we have quite a few Jedi Knights that are there, but we found there weren't quite so many in Hertfordshire. So that gave me some idea of where we could go and look for these Jedi Knights.
So actually, before you move on, can you remove the filter for a second?
All right, yeah.
So I never realized there was a connection between between Star Wars and other science fiction franchises, but does anyone recognize the pattern in the data there? That's Doctor Who's scarf.
Yes.
So this odd crossover that we have going on here. It's a shame that we don't have more time to appreciate that.
Yeah, that's right. And what I did was when I started to look at some of the data as well. This is PowerPivot as well. You can use PowerPivot as a source. And when I open it up, we look here. We can start to list out the countries as well. And then I started to think about, well, if these are the only countries where we've got Jedi, then there's clearly not enough of them. So, for example, there's 404,000 in the UK, but they can't always be in the same place at the same time in order to save the world. It might mean that people in the UK will be all right because we're covered in Jedi, but it does mean, unfortunately, that you guys in the US, there's no Jedi. There's no one to look after you. So we used PowerView in order to see where they lived, and unfortunately, there's no one else in the rest of the world. So we sort of failed in our efforts to try and find a religion or someone who would save us from the world, the end of the world. So we tried to look to Peter then.
Well, but actually, before we get to Peter, so, and this is, I guess, a good effort, and it's great that you're focused on, you know, being proactive and preventing things, and no hard feelings, Mr. Jedi, you know, we didn't expect you to save, I guess, we didn't expect much for you to save all of us some. But while Adam and Jen were presenting, I actually got an email from my boss, so it's morning time back in Redmond, and she's always up early. So the data quality services team, which is where I work today, is actually, we're in the process of moving. And typically at Microsoft, and this does relate, so it's a core part of the story, just need to let you know why we're doing what we're doing. She says that she needs something as soon as possible. Lives are at stake, so it can't wait until the end of the presentation. But we're moving. I packed up my office before coming over to Amsterdam for TechEd. You can see my Viking helmet, which is very important for software development, sticking out of the top there. We packed up the office.
The reason that we're moving is we have more team members coming in. So every once in a while, either we'll hire people, people will transfer from team to team. We've just moved into building 34, so this is our building map. And all of the rooms were already allocated. As new people are coming in, they've got these great administrative folks who will figure out how to have all the team members for the developers and the testers who are working on the same thing to sit as close to each other with the optimal layout. It means we need to move sometimes. So we pack up everything. Some people will move from one place to another place. It'll shuffle around. So you get used to it after a while. It's good to have that that constant change. Now the problem is that Microsoft's end-of-the-world bunker, and we don't usually talk about this in front of non-NDA audiences, but we have actually purchased the government bunker at Cheyenne Mountain. This is in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, where the U.S. government used to have their biggest nuclear stockpile. So we've got money, right? So we've purchased it. We actually have bunkers for each team at Microsoft so that when the end of the world is coming around, if anyone is going to survive to repopulate the world after the apocalypse, it will be geeks. So there's both good news and bad news in this story, though. So the good news is we've got seats. The bad news is they allocated those seats before the new team members joined the team. So I got the email from my boss, and I'm checking email on my phone. I apologize for this. You're not supposed to during presentations, but she said that it was urgent. I need to go in the list that she gave. So let me come in here. I've got a list of team members. We've got the developers, the testers, and the program managers who are working on data quality services to identify if there are any duplicates in there. And you guys are all BI professionals. You've worked with data. You know that even the master data that's out there, often there will be missing data or inaccurate data or duplicate data. And this is where data quality services comes in. It's got tools to let you identify these things. So she sent me this, and I've got it opened up. We've got our first name, our last name, whether they're a dev test or PM, where they live, where they work, and the building that they're in for their office. So good information. With this data, I should be able to figure out who gets into the bunker, right? We'll find those duplicates before we move on. And I notice here, got a couple Matts on the team. So I'm the only Matthew on the team. Let's undo that guy. We've got the one Matthew on the team. But in such a small team, there are three different Matts. And Matt Mason, we won't talk about him. Matt Carroll's a dev lead. Matt Lubert is actually the guy that organizes all of the Friday afternoon cocktail parties that we have. I won't tell you which room because it is secure. But come on, if you're in Redmond on Friday, give me a call before December, right? We'll see if that will work. Got a couple, let's go in there. Let's see what we have. So I'm going to come into our SQL Server Data Quality Services client application. Actually have a knowledge base that Gene, my boss, put together with a matching policy around the data set that she sent. And she couldn't finish it before she had to head off into other emergency end-of-the-world meetings. She sent it on for me to finish up. And interestingly enough, survivorship is one of the key concepts inside the identification and deduplication of data. So what I have here is for each of the domains. So we've got first name, last name, home address. Come on, little application, be more responsive. There we go. It's not a demo without a waiting dialogue. So I can see all this information in here. I can set things like whether or not they need to be similar or exact. I can say, can it be a prerequisite? So if these don't match exactly, don't even bother looking at the other ones. I can set all these things up. But honestly, it's a small data set. It's pretty straightforward. I don't think that we will need to do too much more customization beyond this. We've got the weights set up. So let's actually load this in. So I've got that that bunker staff list Excel workbook that she shared. And the DQS client application will go out, load that in. It's got some custom algorithms that are built in that it's not finding any matches. I know that there are duplicates in here. So let's see a little bit more about what we have. So nothing matched. You know what? This is a problem, I think. So one of the things, this is a work benefit, right? So as part of the employment compensation package at Microsoft, you get your stock options, you get your salary, you get your bunker. That's, we don't usually talk about this in public, so please don't repeat this in other non-private contexts. So since this is a work benefit, we should probably be matching on the work address and not the home address. This may make a difference. So we've got that. Let's choose restart. We'll see if we can match that data again. So let's see. Loading. We've got matches, right? So let's scroll down here a little bit. Notice that we have a couple different clusters. So we have Matt with Mason being the first, and we have Matt with Carol being the first, and Matt with Lubert being the first. So I'm actually going to change this from overlapping to non-overlapping clusters. This will essentially choose one of the records to be the master and the others as duplicates. There's different situations where you might want to use each, but I think that for here, this is what we want. And I'm pretty sure, we've got that, so we will load this up. We have duplicates. This is exactly what we needed to see, right? We have found duplicate data inside this data set, and now that we have this, perfect. So we've got that. Very confident these are the same thing. I'm confident that this is the same thing as well. What are the odds that we would actually have more than one person with the same name?
Not
going to happen. So we're going to choose next. We don't have to rerun this. We'll just choose finish, and we're going to ignore these warnings. I'm sure they're not useful, saying that they're not selective enough, not enough values to match on. So we'll just move on here. She said she needed it really quickly. So we've published these new rules back into our knowledge base. Let's create a data quality project. We'll call this survivorship. We're going to choose that knowledge base, our team bunker knowledge base. We'll choose matching for our activity. I'm sure the data is fine. We don't need to cleanse it anymore. And we will choose next again. Essentially, what this allows us to do, the knowledge base management where we started off, what I was working on while these guys were presenting, this allows us to define the rules, build up the knowledge, do all this stuff. And now, in the project, we can actually put it to use. And I'm going to use the same data, but if I had more data coming in, for example, if there was a different team list, like the data market team, I'm sure.
You can use this too, yeah.
I can use it. I'm very proficient at this tool. Send me the sheet, and I'll make sure that any duplicates.
Uh-huh, get,
yeah,
uh-huh,
yeah.
So you just want my extra large bunk.
I'm
in the bunker.
I'm not going to touch that one. I may be the BI guy, but I'm not going to touch your extra large bunk. So I select the data that I'm loading in, pulling it from this bunker list, automatically matches things up. We'll choose next. It's going to look a little bit familiar. We'll choose non-overlapping clusters. We learned this one. We'll load it in. And once this is done, once it goes through and does the matching on our project data, we will then be able to save this out to Excel, an Excel file. I can send this back to Gene and let Peter get on with his presentation. So, and we'll hide the profiler so we can see the work that's going on. Again, I'm sure that any warnings that it might show about the data. All right, so I'm going to reject. I don't really need more drinks. I mean, I'm sure that that's a duplicate data. Now, once we're here, let's export to Excel. Let's do both our matching results and our survivorship results. So we will say matching, and we will say survivorship. And let's choose that guy. And we will finish. I clicked on the wrong button. So I should have hit export to dump it out to those files. Instead of you guys watching me fiddle around with things, I'll actually switch back over to Peter. So Peter tells me that he has been working on something that may actually change the way that we look at things. So you were looking to see why the Mayans knew or how they knew that the world was ending. Is that right?
Well, before we go there, I just have to say, shame on my friends up here. I mean, they're all jumping to this conclusion that the world is truly going to end in December.
The Mayans said it would.
Well, which Mayan?
The Mayans.
The Mayans. Do you know any on your Facebook profile?
No?
Let's poll the audience. Who here believes the end of the world is coming in December this year? Come on. Hands up. Hands up.
You guys watch Fox News, don't you?
All right. Well, look, maybe I'm not as, what am I going to say, believable or gullible even. When it comes to business intelligence, what I appreciate is that I can extract knowledge and information from data. And so I prefer the evidence-based approach. And by using SQL Server and its trilogy of BI services, can I say that now, Matthew? It's not really a trilogy anymore, is it?
It's massive and beautiful suite. It's
a massive
sweet.
And beautiful suite. Well, the old trilogy from 2005 was the integration services, analysis services, and reporting services.
I think that is the fellowship of integration, the two reports, and the analysis of the king. That's the trilogy that you're looking for, right?
So that trilogy collectively, I think, can at least satisfy my curiosity as to whether I need to start preparing for the end of the world. So let's take a look at this. What I've gone ahead and done,
I think that there's an opening on the data market team pretty soon, so if you want a seat in the bunker, there may be something free.
The extra large bunker? All right. What I've gone ahead and done is created a data model that incorporates some data that I very carefully gleaned. I actually had to take a trip down to the old Mayan cities. Lots of rocks and inscriptions in rocks. And I went through this and I thought, okay,
were there
what
monsters
could I get?
Of rock?
Were there monsters of rock? Not that I remember. That's a rock joke, is it? Okay. Boom. What I was looking for some information that could provide some patterns to me, all right? And so what I've done is produce this reasonably simplistic BI semantic model. You'll see here the new SQL Server 2012 tabular project. In my model here, I have two tables. The first table is my timetable, and I was very thrilled to take on board this project because probably for the first time and only time in my career, I get to create a timetable that actually looks at AD versus BC. And if I had time, I was thrilled to do this, but time didn't permit, was that I could build a hierarchy that gives me a level of millennia, century, decade, and year. And I'd just never done that before in the projects I'd had.
You've never done that?
Not yet. And maybe there'll be no need to beyond 2012, so we will see.
What do you mean maybe? So doubt it.
Well, look, this is what I'm saying about my friends here, so gullible. All right, so first table is simply the year. So you see here I've gone right back to about 752 AD. And then the carefully extracted information from the stones actually told me information about population of the Mayans. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but the Mayans were really quite populous. In fact, I think it's appropriate that we go through a little bit of history here. Just in case you don't know, Mayans, these ancient people, pretty much ruled their lands 2000 BC to about 950 AD. Remember that number. They were masters of things like language, mathematics, and astronomy. So they're pretty smart people. But arguably more important is the fact that they discovered something that's really critical to our life today, I would suggest, and that is chocolate. Who knew this? You couldn't eat a Mars bar today without these people.
So do you know what the plant that chocolate comes from is called?
I know what it looks like, and I included a picture.
It's Theobroma cacao. It's actually, it literally means the food of the gods. So this makes sense that they saw it as a divine gift.
Well, that totally ties into my learnings here. So I learned that chocolate is very much, or was, a health food. It was even a currency, and it was considered a divine gift for the gods. All right? Now, it was so central to the Mayans' lives that they saw that if cacao production ceased, then so would life. So they saw this correlation, in fact, a direct correlation between the population that was supportable in their lands and the amount of cacao.
I actually remember that song. It may have been a Mayan song. I remember it from when I was a child, the "I don't care what they say, I won't live in a world without chocolate." Do you remember that one?
It's probably a Mayan best hit.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. So to this end, the Mayans calculated the supportable population based on the amount of cacao that they could produce, and the cacao must flow was one of the inscriptions that I came across in one of the caves. Temples?
Deserts?
something. All right, and so this is the important part. These were happy and fun-loving people until something happened in 950 AD, and pretty much there was this sudden decline. So with that information that I gleaned about population over year, I was able to plot this, and I thought the best way to show this was by using PowerView. So PowerView works on top of a tabular BI somatic model, so this works perfectly with the model that I've just deployed. And what we can see here is that things were looking good for the mans.
That looks pretty good.
In fact, what I'll do is just make this easier to see. Let's go into full screen mode. And we can see from 752 AD this constant incline in the population. And then sure enough, to my shock, horror, was that something happened.
Did they mention cats on their online dating profile?
I didn't see anything about cats.
No data to support that.
I think you're confusing them with the Egyptians. All right. So how could I take this information and learn what is going to happen? Or maybe even understand what the Mayans were thinking and look at the logic they used.
So you're going to validate their assumption and have the evidence-based approach. So some people would say that the whole Mayan thing is superstition and blah, blah, blah. You're going to back it up with data so that for those of you guys who may not be planning for December, can better plan and get the most out of the days that remain.
Well, we could discover it might be November or October, in which case you need to bring those plans very much forward. Or you may well discover, like the gullibility of my friends here, that it's just not going to happen. But let's see.
Well, Manowar is going to be touring in October, so hopefully it won't be earlier than that.
So here in my solution in SQL Server Data Tools, I have another project that's already been kickstarted. All right, so I'm connecting to a relational database that has all of the population history. I have a data source view that exposes this data in terms of the year key and the population. And then I'm going to go ahead and add a mining structure that will allow me to detect a pattern in what I found and to project into the future where that population might hit something like zero or even negative. All right? Now, I ran into a problem at this point.
If it hits negative, is that predicting the zombie apocalypse?
Open to interpretation. Now, in the wizard, you get to choose the algorithm, and I ran into my first problem here because I was using the Mayan edition of SQL Server. There is no time series algorithm in that edition because it's considered to be redundant. Why would you need to forecast when there's going to be no future?
Well, that makes sense.
All right, so I had to go and install the Business Intelligence edition to then get back this capability to use the time series algorithm, which effectively will take that data and allow the detection of pattern or some type of trend that we can then forecast into the future. So I'll give this the name of the forecast for population. Click Finish, and then I'll go ahead and deploy the entire project to the server. By deploying, it goes ahead and processes the model that I've just created. The process is extracting a pattern that we can then go ahead and visualize using the viewer here. All right, so switch across. The visualization here shows me the solid line, which is the actuals that I have, and then the dotted line is showing me for the next five periods where things are heading. So you can definitely see this decline.
Yeah, that doesn't look good.
No. So where's it heading? And you know what? I could do this for, what, another 1,000 times. Are you happy to wait?
Nope. We have 6 months left. Come on.
Okay. Well, what I'm probably better off doing is switching across to the last tab, whereby I can use a prediction function, specifically the predict time series. Go and predict the actual population for 1,100 steps into the future. Let's see what happens. I don't want that to happen. Close. All right. And sure enough, it's found some pattern, and we can see the population is, on the whole, decreasing. Yeah. Now, I thought it would be better to show you graphically rather than as a grid. All right, so what I would typically do is modify this DMX query. You can flatten it. And as a flattened result, then, I can consume this as any other result set. So really, that query then gets embedded into this integration services package. This package goes ahead and deletes anything that I may have done in a previous demonstration. Then the data flow task here connects to my analysis services database, and it executes that very same flattened query that introduces the 1,100 rows into the data flow, and they get pumped directly into my fact table in my database. And then upon success of all of this, we'll go ahead and process the tabular model, and we can observe the results using PowerView. Okay, green is good. So upon success of this, I can switch back to here. I may refresh. Okay, and in addition to looking at just actual, let's bring in the forecast as well. All right, so we see it kick in here.
Kick in as opposed to kick out.
Kick in, I don't know an equivalent of that. We see it introduced here into my chat.
We don't practice the jokes, just so you know.
I think he's having a go at my heritage. I'm Australian. Any Australians in the audience?
Kick in.
Please help me out here, because for some reason, we're considered to be easy targets.
It's not Australians.
All right. Maybe it's because I called him gullible. He's a little bit offended. All right. Where does this take us? Now, this is a little hard to read, so it's probably a great idea to introduce a filter. And I'll drag the year across here. And we'll create a filter that says anything that starts with 19, as in the 19th or the 20th century, or starts with 20 for the 21st century, because that's what we're thinking.
Well,
is going to be where the end of the world is. Well, let's see. And what do we discover here? You know what? Shockingly, I think the man's got it right.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming, everyone. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you did hear
but
first.
But wait, we've there's got more.
The data. There's more. What?
There's actually more. I'm not satisfied with this. Okay, with the information and the knowledge that the Mayans had, I can now understand how they've arrived at the projection they've arrived at.
And right. You can see that it's true.
Yes, but I did some more research. So just looking at the timeline of what happened, we understand that this civilization collapsed around 950 AD, but I think some things happened in the future that the Mayans just did not see in their crystal ball. 16th century, we saw the Spanish. Who's Spanish here? Your ancestors. Cool. They came in and they discovered the secrets of chocolate for themselves. Now, when they took this back to Europe, what happened was chocolate became incredibly popular, particularly with the European aristocracy. I think some people even smoke chocolate in certain cafes.
Is that like hot chocolate shops? No one has told me about those.
Now, recall that the Mayans thought that there was a correlation between cocoa production and supportable life. All right? So that would suggest, I think, that there was some plague that was affecting the cocoa plants. But what the Spanish did was they took the cocoa plants. If you can repeat that Latin name again.
Cacao, Theobroma cacao.
Thank you. They took it out, and I'm not sure if you're aware that the biggest cocoa-producing countries in the world now African. They took these plants. They thrived in other parts of the world. Demand for chocolate just grew insatiably.
That's good.
Right. But it wasn't until some staggering events happened in 1964. In fact, it was a famous paper that was published that really spurred the demand for chocolate and, in effect, has, I think, saved the world.
So there's some research paper?
Some research paper?
How can a research paper spur demand for chocolate? I understand science is important, but this seems like a stretch. So you're accusing us of being gullible, but come on, I have to be skeptical here that a research paper could make this big of a difference.
Let's come back to that. Let me show you the data first, and let's then talk about what this paper was. Does anyone have an idea about what this paper could be?
Do you guys know any food scientists or ethnographic researchers?
Yeah. I mean, these people know the world's finishing in 2012. I would think you know what this paper is. All right. So what I'm going to do is introduce some more data. So there's some modern actuals about cocoa production. I was able to get this from Wikipedia. No problem. I'll go ahead and execute this, introduce it into my model.
So do we have a chocolate data set in Data Market?
We do have agriculture production, and I'm pretty sure it includes chocolate.
Okay. That's good. You've done a good job. I'm still waiting for the team data set, though. Oh. There it is.
We introduce this revised projection. This is where we see it. All right, something happened in 1964, and I'm still waiting for someone to tell me this life or world.
Is that the moon launch? Event. No, that was 69.
What do we got? Well, 64 was about here, and then we need a bit of traction, then it came up. Okay, I don't think anyone's getting it.
What is it?
Are you ready? Uh-huh. So isn't it interesting to reflect that a children's book has actually, I think, secured future years for this planet?
So is Roald Dahl a Jedi Knight?
Can we refer to your bubble chart?
Is he British?
Potentially. Potentially.
Yeah. He is British. Jedis. Yeah, there's a lot of Jedis in the UK, so possibly so. Uh-huh. Possibly so. Well, plus he could fly.
So you're saying that the entire premise of this talk is flawed and that these guys have wasted the last hour of their time?
All right, so there is some bad news, but the good news is we'd love to see you at TechEd next year. There will be a TechEd event next year.
Well, that is awesome. So why don't we switch back over and wrap things up then? So we have demos. As promised, you have learned absolutely nothing that you can use in the real world. So we expect straight fives on the evaluations that you will fill out. For the most part, anything that's related to BI or SQL Server, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is related to this. We're not going to list everything. Each of us is working to one degree or another at the SQL Server product booth, so at the expo hall down that way. I'll be there for much of the day tomorrow, so please come by and ask questions. Despite the mildly lighthearted yet dark nature of this talk, we do have a stellar release of SQL Server in 2012, which came out back in March. If you haven't seen it, come see it. If you have seen it, come talk to us about it. Let us know what you think. Lots of resources online as well. And please be sure to fill out your evaluations, ideally today, because we're hitting F5 on the web browsers to see what people think, and if not, later on in the week. So thank you very, very much for coming. Enjoy your evening at the, apparently there's some sort of football game. I didn't realize Europeans liked football, but I thought they liked soccer. You guys have a great night. Thank you.
Thank you.